Welcome to Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your one-stop shop when it comes to animation news and commentary. I'm Drew's co-host, entertainment writer Jim Hill, and he and I are recording this on Tuesday, December 29th, 2020, 2 days shy of the new year.
We did it, Jim.
I worry by saying that. Now, what is the Gerald Butler film, where Greenland, where the asteroids are crashing down on Earth? Now, yes. We're going to... Now that we
well, you'll appreciate this, Jim, that I was sent that movie about 6 months ago or so by the studio. Oh. And I said, do not put this movie. I mean, it was such a stressful watch when I watched it 6 months ago. And now it's out now. So everyone can get stressed out by Gerard Butler. Just know that I did not. I said, don't wait until this is over before you put out this movie. So I tried, Jim.
I have to admit, I was over the movie spoiler, reading the storyline, is like, nope, do not want. So we are 2 days shy from the end of 2020. I think I can speak with some confidence that there's a lot of people out there, just like us, who are happy to put 2020 in the rearview. The past 364 days. By the way, the fact that it was a leap year, so we got an extra day of pain. Cherry on the Sunday. But anyway, okay, so admittedly, past 364 days has been a challenge. We got through it, though, folks. And with the arrival of the COVID-19 vaccine, things are a little hopeful as we head into 2021. But that said, the ripples of 2020 will be felt in 2021. Brings me to the news that just broke today about Boss Baby Family Business going from its March 26th release date to getting pushed all the way back to September 17th of this year.
Yeah.
You hear about that?
Yeah, I mean, I also think it's very interesting because Universal has been full guns a-blazing in terms of releasing things during the quarantine and also doing them on VOD, which we saw with Trolls, obviously, and now Croods, A New Age, is on VOD as well. So what this says to me is that things are not going to be immediately better, Jim. I like your optimism. I'm looking forward to 2021, but this to me signals it's going to be a long spring and summer, probably.
I agree. Now, what was kind of intriguing to me about this announcement was, as they did this DreamWorks Animation, The Bad Guys, which I guess had been slated to come out in September of this year, got pushed back to 2022. And The Bad Guys is based on a best-selling series of Scholastic books. And we were just talking on the last show about Dog Man.
Yep.
Also Scholastic books. And out ahead of all of this was Captain Underpants, the first epic movie, which DreamWorks released back in May of 2017, also Scholastic books. Evidently, DreamWorks and Scholastic set up a strategic alliance back in December of 2002, and they only began going after the rights to upcoming releases from Scholastic in June of 2008, and it took them more than a decade, but this move finally paid off, not for Jeffrey Katzenberg, mind you, but for NBC Universal, because they bought DreamWorks in August of 2016 for, what, $3.8 billion, and it was only then that the Scholastic movies started coming out and began making money for the company.
Well, that also makes me think, you know, you and I always talk about, like, what is DreamWorks' role, basically, in Universal's kind of overall strategy, because they also have Illumination, which we're going to talk about in a minute, but, you know, having that Scholastic deal and having those properties ready to go probably makes DreamWorks more desirable, slash, at least you know you're going to, like, you know, we've talked about, well, what is Blue Sky going to do in Disney? We don't know, but at least we know DreamWorks has these Scholastic titles ready to go and for the next few years, which is great.
So how much of moving Boss Baby Family Business to September do you think is COVID related?
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, it's just very surprising because they've been so forthright. Did you watch Croods, by the way? I know you've been dealing with a lot of things in your life.
Yeah, but you know, to be honest, and in fact, you know, we haven't talked about this in the show yet, but my dad passed away back on December 19th. And if I had known the funeral and wake stuff would be so complicated, I would probably try to talk my dad out of dying. And I was like, look, this is very inconvenient. Can we find another way to do this? But yeah, I have seen a good chunk of Croods. I have seen, in fact, it's the same thing with Wolfwalkers. The only thing I've managed to see all the way through, and when I say all the way through, I have to include the fact that I fell asleep for 15 minutes of it, was Soul. Probably not the best movie to watch after your father passes away. I'm just saying. Anyway, I promise I'll catch up on my viewing in the new year. And speaking of the new year, this is what I love about this industry. We got, what, a poster first, a teaser poster for Sing 2. And
yes.
Also casting news.
Yes.
And that's not due out in the theaters till more than a full year from now. What is it?
Yes.
December 22nd, 2021.
Well, I mean, that poster was the definition of a teaser poster. I mean, it was
It's literally Buster Moon from behind peeking out a curtain. And it's
right.
Just like, wow. Okay. But at the same time, you know, that they announced that they've landed Bono as a voice for this film. So kind of a big deal.
Yeah, Bono, Bobby Cannavale, who is great. I mean, he does so many great voices. Pharrell Williams and Letitia Wright. So, pretty good.
No, I agree. I agree. You know, and again, you know, I have to say that Sing, in a weird sort of way, became my default happy place, or at least a chunk of it. Whenever I was feeling especially blue, I would go on YouTube, and there's that wonderful moment from the movie where Mina the Elephant sings Stevie Wonder's Don't You Worry About a Thing, and it's just, it's a wonderful rendition of the song. It's a beautifully built scene, great animation, and it just, I have watched it far too many times, which kind of tells you about 2020.
Right.
Alright, and as long as we're talking about sequels, what did you make of the news about Patrick Dempsey now officially coming back for the Enchanted sequel, Disenchanted?
I didn't even know he was coming back, Jim. This is how I've actually unplugged from work for a few days. And this is the result, Jim. I'm just out of the loop. And I'm very happy that he's coming back. I mean, I thought he was great in the original.
And, he was.
You know, I'm very excited that things seem to be moving in the right direction for this sequel. I mean, how long? That movie came out in 2007, Jim.
You know, and they've got Adam Shankman lined up to direct the thing. And in fact, this is his second high-profile sequel for Disney. You did see he's also attached to Hocus Pocus 2, right?
Yes, and I actually think he's a great choice for both properties.
Okay.
I don't know how you feel about him, but he's great.
I've liked what he's done in the past. But at the same time, I mean, Kevin Lima did such a wonderful job with the first film, which really had to straddle the two worlds, had to deliver the animation stuff, which was an affectionate parody. At the same time, still work as a real, you know, real world fantasy set in New York. What has Kevin done since then? You know, there's been all of these things that he was supposed to do. There was, I remember there was this project where he was supposed to, I think it was 221 Baker Street. The idea was it was a murder mystery set at the alleged address of Sherlock Holmes in London, where real people send letters to that address trying to get Holmes to help with the case. And of course there is no Holmes, but you know, the person who lives there decides to step in, and it just seemed like, oh, that sounds like a wonderful property for Kevin.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
you know,
he obviously had Monkeys of Mumbai that he was working on for a long time, and he put up all that amazing artwork, and then DreamWorks yelled at him to take it down. So,
we were lucky to get to see that when we did. And if you're talking about Kevin, you have to mention his lovely and equally talented wife, Brenda Chapman. And have we talked yet about Come Away?
I think so, because I spoke to her a few weeks ago about the movie. And actually got a quote from her for my epic Rescuers Down Under piece, and she was very sweet. We talked a little bit after. I sent her the article, and she was very kind. So that was lovely. But yeah, I really liked Come Away a lot. I thought it was really great.
Now, this is the conceit of the boy who inspired Peter Pan, or the girl who inspired Alice, were real life brother and sister, or at least in this particular story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've got Angelina Jolie as their mom.
I mean, it's got a great cast, and it's very wonderful, and you know, has all the kind of little detail that you expect from a Brenda Chapman movie. The kids are all really great, which, you know, these movies can live or die with how annoying the children are, but they're really wonderful here. And Yeah, I would recommend it if you get a chance to see it. I don't know where it is.
Well, that's the thing that's making me crazy. Okay, so it has its world premiere at Sundance back in January. It's released by Relativity Media in the States back in the middle of November, and I guess it just opened in the UK like a week or so ago. But I was just hammering on Google to try to find if it's still in theaters, or more to the point, if anybody's going to be streaming it anytime soon, and it's nothing. It's nowhere. And
it's a pay VOD thing right now. So you can actually rent it or buy it different. Yeah, but there's no streaming. And you know what? This would have really been a great Disney Plus movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you saw Black Beauty, Jim, but the standards were not cleared on that one. So I feel like this would have been a really smart choice for Disney, but, you know, obviously they're working on their own Peter Pan movie, and they've done Alice in Wonderland. So I can see why they wouldn't want to kind of step on their own toes, but.
No, I get that. But again, Brenda and Kevin do such great work, and it just sort of would be nice to have them have a home.
Yes.
You know, where they could be producing stuff. Oh, a couple things though, before we step away from talking about Disenchanted. They've just recently hired a new writer for the project. Her name is Bridget Hale. She worked on ABC's long-running hit Once Upon a Time. So that kind of bodes well, you know, somebody who's already been working with fairy tale characters in the real world. So it's like, okay, cool.
She's what, the 150th writer to attempt?
Yeah. take a number.
I have a draft, Jeff, that they need to circle back to.
They'll be calling shortly, Drew. The other thing, though, I do want to point out, while we're talking about Disenchanted, we should also point out that Disenchantment, the Matt Groening show, season 3 of that starts on Netflix on January 15th, and there's a brand new trailer for that just dropped.
Keeping up with it, Jim?
When season 2 dropped last year, I so enjoyed that. In fact, I want to say the standout of that season, there was the sort of Selkie story, the one involving the woman in the bear suit,
right.
that I thought was especially good. But again, that starts next month in January, and which I guess we should take a moment to talk about what's coming in 2021. Again, with the understanding and the caveat of we are heading into, especially after the holiday period where, you know, so many people, against what the CDC said, traveled and hung out with family members and that sort of thing. And we're seeing a crazy surge in regard to COVID. In fact, I don't know if you saw the projection that by the middle of January, we're going to potentially be at 400,000 deaths in the United States from this thing.
Oh, my God.
But again, that's why you listen to this show, folks. You want happy news, right?
So, right.
I want to stress that this is the news as of today. These are the films that are supposedly coming out on these release dates. Remember what we saw happen last year with dozens of films getting release dates either changed or shifted or things going to streaming or the like.
Right.
But anyway, February 26th, we're going to get our Tom and Jerry live action animated hybrid from Warners. But my understanding, again, that's HBO Max and some theaters?
Yes.
Okay. Then March 5th, we get Raya and the Last Dragon from Disney. You and I had talked about the Premier Access thing and, you know, how it was interesting that Mulan, the live action Mulan, did this, but Soul did not. But here we are, you know, Raya and the Last Dragon on March 5th. Again, Premier Access on Disney Plus and in some theaters. And then in theory, come April, we're going to start to see the wide enough distribution of vaccines to the general public that you actually watch theater, you know, you watch the studio sort of, okay, I think we can confidently move things into theater. So April 2nd, we have Peter Rabbit, The Runaway from Sony.
So excited for that, Jim. I'm just going to break this up and say I can't wait to see Peter Rabbit too. I thought the first one was delightful. So I'm really excited.
I enjoyed Corden's voice work in it. So it's just sort of like, this will be fun. On the other hand, we have the movie that Drew insists will never actually make it out into any theater. And that's the Bob's Burgers, the movie from Disney and 20th Century Studios. And after that, another project. In fact, I'm fascinated by the fact that these two are just 2 weeks apart. Ron's Gone Wrong from 20th Century Studios and Locksmith Animation, distributed by Disney. What's your standing bet now between Bob Zurger's The Movies and Ron Gone Wrong?
Well, did you see that they released a synopsis for Bob Zurger's The Movie? Granted, this is the feature film based on the long-running animated series Bob Zurger's. But, Jim, it's one step in the right direction to this movie actually existing / coming out. So,
okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
Ron's Gone Wrong, I mean, I don't know. Listen, both of those movies are Fox movies, and if you and I know anything, it's that they burned off Fox movies in a way. You remember that movie, The Empty Man, that came out this fall? That didn't even have a trailer until a week before it was coming out in theaters. So, I'm not saying that that's going to happen with these two. I'm saying it could happen, though. So, let's just keep an eye on that.
Okay, and speaking of movies we're keeping an eye on, what about Rumble?
Oh, that looks terrible.
Yeah, well, with a May 14th release date, I mean, that's a week or so before that is when Marvel's pushing out Black Widow. So what's fascinating to me is over the past 4 and 5 years, that's become where summer blockbuster season supposedly begins. So the fact that Paramount is putting this out there then suggests, okay, that they think there's money to be had there.
Well, we talked about how the Skydance animation stuff is going to Netflix now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. By the way, I wanted to ask you about that, because you must have seen the news just last week about how supposedly there's a deal in the works now that Skydance animation is supposedly selling Luck and
Spellbound.
Spellbound.
Yeah.
That's with the Alan Menken score.
Yeah.
But the idea is that these were supposed to be released by Paramount, but evidently there are discussions going on right now to sell those to Apple TV.
Yeah.
I have to wonder what John Lasseter thinks of that, because Steve Jobs was his mentor in so many different ways. So in a weird way to have his movies now being released through Apple, but.
Well, it also goes to show you that my joke that we're going to have to call Light the Fuse the Paramount podcast, because the Mission Impossible movies are the only movies Paramount is actually going to release. Could be true. I mean, talk about a studio that has no interest in putting out movies. Did you see the Coming to America trailer? You know, it's like, come on, guys. That is money in the bank. And yet we'll see that one on Amazon in March. So, yeah, it's wild.
Just jumping ahead on the list here, Space Jam, A New Legacy. Did you see that LeBron James thing that they hyped as a trailer but was really sort of a pitch for a sweepstakes?
I saw his costume, which they debuted on, I think, the DC fandom thing a few weeks ago. But,
Yeah.
I mean, we'll get into Space Jam, I think, you know, obviously before it comes out, but the fact that the director and cinematographer left the movie like 6 weeks into shooting, not the best sign, Jim, is all I'm going to say.
Well, and we do have sort of a log line for this movie. In fact, as part of this teaser / game pitch thing, he described the sequel to 96's Space Jam as, "We'll be taking you on an exciting ride through Warner's most iconic characters and Bugs that I will have to battle and play some ball against an evil AI."
Yeah, I think we've talked about the other IP that they're bringing into this, including Harry Potter and Batman characters, but.
Oh my god, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, anyway, let's talk about the good stuff. You know, we got June 18th, Luca, and what I've seen of that so far looks lovely. July 2nd, we've got Minions, Rise of Gru, and then Hotel Transylvania 4, which Gennady wrote it, isn't directing it, but, you know.
Wrote it and is producing it. That's good enough for me, Jim.
Okay.
I'm ready. I'm ready for it.
And then jumping ahead to November, we have Encanto, Lin-Manuel, going to work on the score for that one, so. If you look over the 13 different films we've just talked about here, we've got 8 are sequels, prequels, reboots, or based on television series. We got a total of 5 originals, and 2 of those are Disney's, Encanto and Luca, which is coming out through Pixar. Sounds to be a tough year, and there's a lot of stuff that's supposedly going to be happening after the inauguration. We're talking about how there's supposedly... Biden's already talked about 100 days of, you know, a mandate, a federal mask mandate that we have to wear masks as a country for 100 days in an effort to knock down COVID. And the language that Biden has used is, I am not going to shut down the economy, period. But that doesn't necessarily preclude some sort of limited national shutdown. So long story short, folks, we could be stuck at home again, and we could be watching even more television. And tell you what, when Drew and I get back, we will talk about the 2 films you probably should be watching during the upcoming shutdown.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, so you heard about this year's Academy Awards getting pushed back to April, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know that all the eligibility period has also been extended. So you're going to see things in January and February that would have typically come out before the end of the year. Lots of Netflix things. There's that secret Netflix movie that with the John David Washington, who was just in Tenet. And Zendaya filmed like in secret during quarantine that's coming out. And so there's going to be a few of those types of big prestige movies coming out in the first couple of months, which is different because you and I know all the dogs come out in January.
Do we know what the cutoff date is for consideration?
I think it's the end of February. I can look that up. Yeah.
The 2020 Academy Awards, the ceremony was actually held on February 9th. Now, mind you, because 2021, the Academy Awards are being held on April 25th. Back in the 70s, the Academies were held almost that late. 71, they were held on April 15th. In 72, they were held on April 10th. But what is unusual when it comes to the nominees for this year's Best Animated Features, you know, a number of members of the Academy aren't going to have seen these films in theaters. They're going to have streamed them. And the top two contenders, really, Pixar's Soul and Wolfwalkers. I mean, Wolfwalkers got a really, really, really limited release here in the States, right?
A
weekend?
You know, in one guy's garage, Jim. You had to know the password to get in and... But he had a lot of snacks, and so I think that they just packed them in there, and that's how they showed it. Yeah.
Okay. So have seen Soul, and as I was explaining earlier, so have yet to see all of Wolfwalkers, but I honestly love what I've seen. Likewise, Croods, A New Age, and that one's particularly embarrassing because right now, I mean, that became available for streaming on the 23rd, and it's everywhere. I mean, you can get this thing on Apple Prime, Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Google Play, Fandango Now, AMC Theaters on Demand, likewise Alamo on Demand. I mean, it's out there if you want to see it. But one quick aside here, though, given that we're talking about places like Amazon and Apple, did you see the news on December 22nd about MGM?
Yes.
The two investment banks getting ready to potentially put the studio and the film library up. And what's fascinating to me was the thing about which of these three guys are going to buy this thing. And the names they put out there were there was Bob as in Bob Chapek at Disney. There was Tim as in Tim Cook at Apple. And then Jeff is in Jeff Bezos at Amazon. If you were a betting man, this is over 4,000 film titles and 17,000 hours of television. Where do you think this is going to end up?
My bet is Apple. I think Amazon they don't talk about Netflix because Netflix has too much debt, so they're not going to take on $5.5 billion more. Mm-hmm. Amazon, sure, that could be. I don't think that Disney is interested. They were the only studio to not bid for the theatrical distribution for the 007 movies. And to me, that's the big, that's the crown jewel of this MGM deal is the James Bond franchise. So yeah, I think it's going to be Apple, but yeah. Okay. What do you think?
I had an idea, but you have a much better argument. So I always default to the smarter person. So circle back to Soul. Now you got to see Soul a couple of times before it finally debuted on Disney Plus on yes. December 25th. Did you actually get to see it in a theater?
No. I was offered a chance to see Wonder Woman in a theater, but I was not in LA at the time. So okay. I did not get to see it in a theater, but I got to watch Soul again on Christmas Day with the family. I'm sure a lot of other people did. And that was a lot of fun to see it without a watermark, it's always a blessing. So yeah, I mean, I love it. What did you think of Soul?
Well, I kept thinking that, as I was watching it and how beautifully it was designed and the wonderful concepts like the Jerrys and get for that, Matt, the Terry, Terry was wonderful. I kept thinking, oh man, I wish I'd seen this for the first time in a theater on the biggest possible screen because it's so beautifully designed. And I mean, Nancy and I were gifted by my nephew for Christmas, the state of the art Dolby soundbar. So while we were setting it up, I got my eyebrows blown off when Nancy fired the thing up. so we got to hear it with the best possible sound that we could have in our house. But I just sort of like, I would love to have heard this score in a professional theater, to be surrounded by that music and swept up in what Pete Docter was obviously trying to do with this thing. And I kind of worry that,
What about the music, Jim?
Oh, I am such a Luddite. After I heard this thing, it's like, I gotta go order the CD. And it's like, yeah, and what are you gonna play the CD in, Putz? It's like,
there are two vinyl records you can get, Jim.
Oh!
One with the Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross, Soul World music. Mm-hmm. And then the other with the John Batiste jazz compositions. So, you might want to think about that.
Okay, because recently, are you familiar with Jacob Collier?
No.
If you want a treat, head over to YouTube. He's a kid who just in the past couple of years has won 4 Grammys for his amazing work in jazz and choral. I mean, he's this amazing deconstructionist when it comes to taking standards and reinventing them with his own jazz stylings. And that was a thing to have spent a couple of days deep into that and then to get to sit back and watch Soul and hear the wonderful jazz that had been created for that film. It was just, like double desserts. It was, such a treat. And having really enjoyed that film, as we head into a late start to the Academy Award consideration season, I would honestly really prefer if, when it came down to it this time around, Wolfwalkers took the Best Animated Feature Award, largely because, A, I think it would mean more to Tom Moore and that studio.
Yes.
Also, to be honest, anything that would put more wind in the sails for hand-drawn animation, because it is such a spectacular-looking film. I mean, they are two very, very different animals. Pixar has been recognized for its efforts multiple times, and I'm sure there are other great Pixar films coming. In fact, Luca looks amazing.
Well, this year we could get 2 Pixar movies up for the award if Onward also gets nominated.
Yeah. I have to let you know I gifted 2 friends of ours copies of Onward.
Oh, yay.
Because, man, it's a wonderful book, written by a really nice guy. But, and it's
going to be an interesting crop because you have, on the Netflix side of things, you have Willoughby's and Over the Moon, which I think could both get a nomination. And then you have, there were 2 DreamWorks movies this year too. DreamWorks also has a short film in contention this year, which is sort of exciting. And, you know, never underestimate G-Kids, Jim, and the release of Lupin the Third, the first, which, you know, I loved and I think is on VOD now. So everyone should watch that. It's just going to be a really interesting crop. And I, you know what? I'm going to boldly proclaim that I think Soul will get a Best Picture nomination. So.
Really?
Yes, okay. I think it will be the fourth animated feature to get a Best Picture nomination.
Okay, but are we still in 10 nominees country when we do that? Or?
We are in. Well, it doesn't have to be 10. It's sort of a odd bat. You know, it can be between 5 and 10, depending on the way the votes come in. So we will see.
I could be happy with that. I genuinely could, given the impressive narrative ambition there.
Even though you spoiled it for yourself like 6 months ago by reading the book?
It's an art of book. I didn't know I'd get 60
pages. Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
All right. Speaking of well-written things, I wanted to let you folks know that Drew has been busy and has another wonderful piece up on Collider that you really, really have to check out. This went up on the 22nd, right? That this is a...
Yeah. Don't ask how I even did this one, Jim, because...
I have to admit, given it as busy as you've been, you know, in December, how many words was this one?
This one was, quote unquote, only 5,500, Jim. So, you know, this is like a breezy afternoon stroll compared to some of my other ones. So,
well, all right. And I guess we should mention the film you wrote about, which was Emperor's New Groove. And to add a little personal history here, when I started writing for the internet, my very first article was November of 1998.
Just out of rehab. this is part of your work release.
There we go. That's right. You know, had to keep the ankle bracelet on.
Yes.
But yeah, I did a review of Michael Eisner's work in progress, the thing that got me launched and writing for the internet. But during this same time, I have friends who are working at Feature Animation out in Burbank, and it's in this exact same window of time that Kingdom of the Sun is crashing and burning. I must have written about this film over the next 2 years till it was finally released in December of 2000. I must have done a dozen or more articles. In fact, what was so funny today when I was, you know, trying to get the dates and the times right. So I go over to Wikipedia just to check things. And literally, the very first story on Wikipedia is out of the 100 or more things that they cite is an article I wrote in 2004. So it's like, oh, God, don't listen to that idiot. You know, so it was particularly delightful to get your take on this because you got stories I'd never heard before.
This is always my goal, Jim, to illuminate some dark corner of Disney animation history that even you have not even heard. That's my goal every time.
And again, I don't want to give the whole thing away. You really have to go over to Collider and read this thing. Can you talk about how it was Eisner who actually assigned Roger Allers, you know, kind of the starting point, right?
Yeah, I mean, from what he says, and this is in the documentary, The Sweatbox, which we, you know, you and I cannot recommend enough. And is actually on YouTube right now.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's been up for 5 months. So watch it now before they take it down. I even know the executive that personally pulls these things down. So I haven't told him it's up.
Okay.
And I will not tell him it's up. So go on there and watch it right now. But he said that Eisner came to him and said, you did Africa, can you do something with South America? Mm-hmm. So, obviously they found the whitest guy in the building and let him go about doing that.
They go down to South America, they do the tour, and they come back eventually they settle on kind of an Incan take on Prince and the Pauper, right?
This is how I think the story went. And Jim, tell me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. See, this is the problem. And you know, Randy Fulmer tells this great story about how he was pitching the movie for an entire plane ride.
No, I love that. I love that. You know, in a town where you have to have an elevator pitch.
Yeah.
You got 30 seconds, if that, to sell your movie. The fact that Randy was on a plane flight from LA to New York and only finished telling the story to his seatmate like
5 minutes before they touched down. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the moment. Randy realized maybe we got too much story. But all right.
So it had the Prince and Pauper thing where it was a emperor or a soon to be emperor played by David Spade who switches places with a commoner played by Owen Wilson. Right. Then there was the Yzma was there, but she was kind of a very vain character who hated the sun. And you can actually go on YouTube and listen to her song, which was pretty much animated by Andreas Deja.
Oh,
and he loved it because he said that he got to do this great camp character, you know, that he had never done before. And then there's a talking sort of idol, a stone idol. Do you want
Waka,
to talk about that character?
Waka, yes. Waka, yeah. In fact, he's actually, honestly, out of this version of the film, he's my favorite character. I mean, the idea is he's this talisman that every single emperor of the Incas, he's been sort of the right-hand man, the advisor. And we finally get to Manco. That was the name of the character
That was the Cusco character.
Yeah. And he just dismisses the character. So Huaca ends up now advising Yzma. And Harvey Fierstein had done the voice of Yao for Mulan. He was a member of the Gang of Three, the soldiers that, you know, first give Mulan a bad time in camp, but then become her loyalist friends in the army. And the thing was that Harvey, you know, every time he came in, he made every scene funnier. Everything they gave Yao to do got better and better. And so when they're wrapping that project up in late spring of 98 and Harvey's heading out the door, it's like, no, we like working with him. We want to hang on to him. So as they're gearing up Kingdom of the Sun, they give him Huaca. Can you tell the story about when the film's in trouble and as they do when things get scary, you know, at studios, they make weird decisions. Can you talk about who they were potentially going to replace Harvey as the voice of Huaca with?
Yeah, so one of the stories in my article is sort of how Don Hahn was kind of a backup producer on this thing. And so when it went into chaos, he kind of got motivated and he called Arnold Schwarzenegger's people and asked them about voicing the character because I think what he was trying to tell me was that they were looking at any angle to make this movie cool or sellable at all. Yeah. Right? Like they just want, you know, they're shoveling buckets of water out of the sinking ship trying to get some levity in there. So yeah, that was something I had never heard before. That's for sure.
What would happen is it would be Friday afternoon and a friend who was right in the middle of all this and he would talk about how we were just today in a meeting where we're working on Kingdom of the Sun and somebody, one of the research people came in and mentioned that you understand that the story is set prior to the invention of the wheel. You know, and it's like, I can't help but notice you've got, Banco is riding in a cart and it's not authentic. We have to take all the carts out of the movie. They got so in the weeds with the research and so, you know, they lost their way. In fact, please talk about what happened with Chris Williams, a director of Zootopia and Moana, right?
Yeah, he co-directed Moana. He directed Big Hero 6. He has a movie that he's working on Netflix right now about a sea monster. Mm. You hear the people talk about this amazing pitch that Chris Williams did where he basically boarded a sequence that took out everything but what ended up in Emperor's New Groove. So you had the llama, you had Cusco, you know, you had all this stuff. And Roger Allers approved this pitch. I mean, he said, go ahead and do it. But the response to it was so great that it led to this insane bake-off scenario, which is another thing that I learned about from Randy and Mark Dindal, which is that they were co-directors on the movie and then they were separated and forced to pitch their own version of the movie. And so Mark pitched his version with Chris Williams, you know, and it was more comedic and more streamlined. And Roger was still hanging on to too many different story threads and they obviously did not choose his, but I had never heard that story either. And that really blew me away.
And what I love about this article is you did a wonderful job talking with all the folks who worked on it, but also it's kind of a twofer because you also stress why people need to seek out the Sweatbox, Trudy Styler's
movie. Right.
I mean, the 1-2 punch that Roger experienced in this movie. Can you talk about what happened inside of 24 hours to this poor man?
Yeah, he went and dropped his daughter off at college on the East Coast and came back to work on that Monday and was fired from the movie. So he talks a lot in this documentary about, you know, that kind of like profound sadness and of saying goodbye. And you know, I get into the sting of it all mm-hmm. in the article pretty in depth because a lot of people had, you know, good stories about Sting. But in the documentary, you see Randy calling Sting and essentially firing Sting. And, you know, I think he told me that Sting tried to quit 5 more times after that. And he just did not acknowledge that Sting was trying to quit. So.
I love how you talk about how Mark Dindal actually explained where the comic style of the film came from. And basically what? It's from his mother's trip to Sears on Saturday, right?
Yeah. He didn't have a color TV, so he would go with his mom to Sears on Saturday morning, and he and his brother would just sit in front of the bank of color TVs for the hour or so while his mother shopped, and they would just watch Looney Tunes. And he brings up this review, which I couldn't find the exact review, but he said, you know, that there was a review that said it was the most Warner Brothers cartoon Disney ever made. Mm-hmm. And he loved that, you know, he loved that review. But yeah, that whole sensibility, which is just so different and so unique to Emperor's New Groove, came from such an organic, emotional place. And I think that's why it works so well. I mean, they talk about how, you know, one of my favorite things that Mark says mm-hmm. is that movie's wacky sensibilities come from a real place, a real emotional place. And that's why they work so well, I think. I don't know. Do you like the movie, Jim?
I know. I love the film. I love the fact that they would break the fourth wall at regular interviews. Likewise, Patrick Warburton's wonderful work is Crunk. And you have this wonderful quote in the story about Tom Schumacher at one point. It says, look, I have to go across the street and tell Michael Eisner that we spent $40 million on this so far and we don't have a movie. So when it was finally done, this thing cost Disney $100 million to make, and it only sold 169 worth of tickets worldwide, a million worth of tickets worldwide. So it wasn't exactly a financial success, but over time it really has it's acquired it sort of a second life, going to become a cult favorite. And it's so weird to watch it bubble up in pop culture. You know, I can't tell you the number of times I've come across people doing that, pull the lever, Crunk, that kind of Eartha Kitt thing. But David Spade tells a wonderful story about why they had to change his character's name from Manco to Kuzco. How do you want to thread the needle here?
We know Ava is listening, Jim, and we cannot this work is, blue, this you know, with her listening. So,
but actually, it's the second half of that story that I especially love, because it wasn't the offensive thing in Japanese that made them decide to change the name. It was what Manco meant in Turkish.
Right. He said it means bad movie in Turkish, and they didn't want that, which is very funny.
I agree. So, well, anyway, Emperor's New Groove holds up beautifully. Great fun today. And this is a great, fun story. We've only just skimmed the surface of what Drew's uncovered. So if you know, again, if you want to get the really good, juicy stuff, hand on over to Collider. This piece was published on December 22nd and still well worth reading. And, okay, I guess that's going to do it for our last show of 2020.
Oh, we're so sad to see it go, Jim. Oh, no.
Yes. But again, this is of course not the only podcast that you do. And, I remember on the last show, you weren't entirely sure what Light the Fuse was up to. Do we have a better handle on what's going on right now? Or?
No, I don't, Jim. But, I do know that we are going, I mean, I think that our Light the Wick miniseries starts in late January. So
okay. That
is something that we are very, very excited about.
Before we step away from Mission Impossible, I do have to ask one question, because obviously the some news broke, you know, while we were away. That piece of audio of Tom on the set of Mission Impossible 7.
I've never gotten more text messages, Jim, in my life than...
Really?
It was like Princess Diana had died. It was like, you know, there was just so many people texting me about it.
But I get it. I get why you'd be behind that. And in fact, what he was saying about we can't get sloppy about COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think he could have been nicer about it, certainly, and used softer language. But those movies cost $500,000 a day to shoot. So. Yeah. Who's gonna, I mean, do you want to be responsible for shutting that down? I certainly don't. So, yeah, I mean, I think that the intent with that audio was to make him look bad, but I think a lot of people just said, you know what, he's right. Like,
No, that's it exactly. And they're back to work. I guess Christmas break was over yesterday, so they're back on set now. Just trying to get this thing done and get it done ready for that November 19th, 2021 release date. So
let us pray.
All right. Please be sure to go check out Light the Fuse, or more to the point, you know, keep an eye out for Light the Wick starting in January. And by the way, we also have some fun podcasts here at the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. We got Disney Dish with Len Testa, just recorded a brand new Mud, Marvel Us Disney with Aaron Adams yesterday. I'm going to be recording my last Looking at Livisil with Dan Z tomorrow night. And I just did a brand new I Want That with, in fact, that went up today, with Shelley Valladolid, and going to be doing a new, Universal joint with Dustin Fuse later this week. So got a lot of shows headed your way. But tell you what, folks, if you could do Drew and I a favor, if you get head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review, again, not only fine tuning, but if you could also, put a review in there for, Light the Fuse, that would be incredibly helpful. And if you really, really, really like what you're here tonight, if you want to head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that would be helpful. Just if you are not following Drew on social media, you are just missing out. It is just so much fun. Make sure they get the spelling right, okay?
Yeah, it's Drew Tailored, like a tailored shirt. Jim is right. I do have a lot of fun on my Twitter, and you can see me go through all my old stuff, which is what I've been. Did you see my Roger Rabbit button I found, Jim?
I did. So that was Disney Break 90? Was that?
Yeah, so it was a spring break, I guess, promo thing from 1990, and it has a really cool image of Roger Rabbit that I love, and I was just so excited to find that button. So this is the kind of great content you can look forward to.
Seriously, check that out, folks. Meanwhile, Nancy would like me to remind you that you can find us on Twitter and Instagram as Jim Hill Media, and then on Facebook as Jim Hill Media News. And thanks for listening. On behalf of Mr. Taylor, thanks for hanging with us in 2020, and here's hoping, 2021 has to be better, right, Drew?
I think so. Well, regardless, we're going to be talking about animated movies, so... You know, just come back. We'll be here every week. Whether we like it or not, we'll be here.
Okay. Well, there's a ringing endorsement. All right. Okay. Talk to you later, folks.